Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron, in the 21st century. Hardworking people, working hard for you and me. Moving Iron, time and time again. You'll find us here, Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 135. Today my guest is Tori Seiler from Belton Machinery here in Kearney, Nebraska. So, Tori, how you doing today, bud?
Not too bad, Casey. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for being on the show, and look forward to learning about what you see happening in your neck of the woods. There's plenty of stuff going on right now. You take a look at what's happening out there, especially where you're at. You guys gotten plenty of rain. Not that we haven't gotten any out here on this side of the state either, but we survived another snowstorm again here, which shocks me. My kids went to school in the last day of school during the snowstorm. That amazes me. But
I heard that. Well, one of our guys up at Shattern was sending Snapchats, yeah, and they're deep snow.
They got some snow up there, and like you get over by Gordon, up by Valentine, north along the South Dakota border, they got like a 15 inches of snow up there, 18 inches of snow. I mean, it's just crazy what it was. Nuts.
Well, I was just complaining to my wife last night that I shouldn't have my heater on to be in the May.
Right. No kidding. You had a jacket on and everything. So, yeah, it's a weird batch of weather we have going on right now. And you take a look at what's happening and how that's affecting planning progress and those kind of things, you know, talk a little bit about what's happened in your area and kind of what's the reaction to the growers out in your area.
Well, around here, say my office is based out of Kearney, and I, you know, spent a lot of time in the, you know, four or five counties around there. The other day I was driving into the store, just started counting fields that had been planted or hadn't been in, you know, and the little survey I did, it was like 9 out of 10 were planted. And I think that, so I'd say we're probably, at least on the corn side, we're probably 85-90% planted down here, but that's, don't take that to the bank. But there's so I think guys are feeling pretty good about it, you know, early on with some of the stuff that was planted, you know, a month ago and the stuff that was planted a week ago came up at the same time, which I think had a lot of guys pretty nervous. But I think there's going to be a little bit of replant because of that, but I don't think there'll be much, if any, prevent plant around here. But I think for the most part, corn's ending, you know, beans, you can fudge it a little bit more. So.
Yep. Okay. So with all that being said, so what's the overall temperature right now of the grower? You know, we take a look here. I got my morning alert up here, and you just look at what's on the board. Corn right now is doing its crazy thing. You know, July corn's at 395 and December corn's at 413 and a quarter. That was back at 630 this morning. It's all over the place. You know, things are actually turning around, but what's the overall temperature of your growers right now? What do you see happening out there? Are they starting to kind of perk up a little bit now that they've kind of made their planting progress and they're kind of in a decent spot, or what's the feel for what you see happening out there?
Fair to partly cloudy.
Right. Okay.
I think it's, you know, here as of late, well, you know, last 2 weeks, 10 days, it's been fairly positive. You know, anytime we see green numbers on the board, I think guys get excited. But, you know, was it 2 months ago when we lost 30 some cents or whatever it was that we thought, well, we're done for the year. but yeah, it's been pretty good. There's been a lot of, you know, a lot more activity, especially since with the planting season we had, with, you know, the window was even smaller than it's ever been. So a guy has been looking at updating machinery for next year. I think it has them looking ahead. It's probably just maybe the perfect combination of, you know, less undesirable planting season plus a little bit higher market. And, so it's it's looking better all the time, but but everybody I think still has that premonition that it can it can change pretty quick. But it seems like a lot of guys are getting their orders in on the marketing side, and at least getting some guaranteed dollars for this fall. So
there's definitely a feel out there where there's some apprehension, obviously, because we've been through this once before, right? About this time last year, we hit that $4 mark, and everybody was like, oh, good, we're fine, turned the corner, and it went backwards about 30 cents, and then we kind of hovered around that 370, 375 range on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And then, here we do it again, but we gained 50 cents in the last 2 weeks, I think, maybe something like that. And so, I think guys right now are so focused on what's going on in their field right now and getting their stuff planted so they can get that rise in the price and start, forward contracting some stuff and those kind of things, that there is some little bit of play out there. So your crop mix out where you're at right now, is that just pretty much corn and beans, or is there what all is made up to what you're at right now?
Majority corn and beans. There's, a dabble of wheat here and there. Got some potatoes. Some as in one farm that grows them. But for the most part, corn and beans.
Corn and beans, yep. So you're large, just straight up row crop country. All the stuff that you have going with all the different terra
right,
fields and
right.
stuff like that. So you have a pretty good fix on what's going on there. So if you take a look at here this week, we had the what is it called? USMCA or whatever it is that took over NAFTA. And that thing got finalized, or at least agreed upon now anyway. Still got to ratify everything and get it all signed and all that fun stuff. Had a pretty good run with Japan on getting US beef over there, which hadn't been there for a while. So there's going to be some stuff there. But as you look across that, how do you think that's going, I guess, moving forward through spring, and you start looking at what's going on in the fields and in some anticipation of some cash out there? Are your farmers still, are they still thinking, I'm going to kind of wait and see till after harvest and maybe start making some moves? Or are some guys coming to the table now saying, hey, I want to get a new combine, or I want to get a new tractor, or whatever?
A little bit of both. I think that, the guys that understand the early order stuff, coming up, I think everybody's early order on planters are coming up. So that's really been picking up here lately. I think guys are, like I was saying, with the type of planting season they had, either they want to add rows or add speed or whatever. So they're really, really, and having the precision planting offering on our planters has really, really kind of jump started that for me anyways right now. But then there are the guys that, they got to have it in the bin first before they or their bankers, will want to start talking about, machinery.
Yeah. I know that song and dance. Yeah. Definitely know that song and dance. So, let's talk about those planters for a minute, because like you said, this is the time of year when EOPs for planters start rolling through. And what does your planter market look right now? Is it, you have more guys that are looking at maybe downsizing rows and getting faster, or just getting bigger and faster?
Really, nobody that I've talked with yet has wanted to downsize and speed up. They've all either wanted to add rows or just add the technology or the horsepower, I guess. To be able to go a little faster. I think there's probably pockets out in your neck of the woods where there's a lot of mounted planters with the gravity irrigation, and some of that's starting to go away. So guys are either looking to get into a drawn planter, or they're wanting a wider mounted planter, 16 row. So
that's what we're seeing too. I really thought when the high speed technology came in to effect that you would start seeing guys that would say, you know what, I can do the same amount of stuff now with my 16 row that I could with the 24 row, because I can go 5 mile an hour faster or whatever. It really hasn't hasn't affected the size of planters. It's been surprising. I really thought that would be there'd be some of that conversation anyway, whether it happened or not, but there'd at least be just some conversation about it, and it's not been that way. So it's been it's been one of those things where guys, like, we actually had a guy that went from a 24 row to a 36 row and didn't have the exact emerge and added the exact emerge on that plant so he could get bigger and faster. So I was like, man, that's kind of completely backwards of what I thought it would do. But that planter technology has really come a long ways in the last 5 years. So when you're talking about planters with your producers, what's the one thing they always gravitate to when they're talking about those planters?
Well, anymore, it's got to be bulk fill, but the real, real big thing is the delta force, the hydraulic downforce on the precision side. And then, have a little bit of interest in like the high speed, the speed tubes, but it usually the delta force is really what gets guys going. But then the electric drives too, I think a lot of guys, if they could throw their shafts and everything else and the cable drives and the dumpster, they would right now. So
that's the same thing for, I think when I look at the planter market in my area, and then you start looking, nationwide, the high speed planter thing, even though they're expensive, there's no doubt about it, they're expensive planters, but take a look at the situation in right now. When you got 7 days to plant in between 2 weeks of rain on both sides of that, you've got to go. And I think that's the one thing, even more than the seed placement and even pressure across the across all the things, electric drives, where each drive can do kind of its own thing and all that. That's all important, the agronomic side of it, and guys are gravitating towards that because they're seeing the emergence and so on and so forth. But they're also thinking about, I can go 8 miles an hour, 10 miles an hour, and this planter I got out here is, 4 to 5 or maybe 6 miles an hour. And they're thinking about the number of acres. You're on Twitter. You see those monitors out there where those guys are showing 120 acres an hour that they're planting and stuff like that, The biggest thing is on these planters is that you run into, you might be able to technically plant 120 acres an hour, but can you keep it full long enough to go out and do that, And that's the hard part with these planters now.
Yeah. Well, and it takes a mile to turn it around.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yep. Then you run into a whole other thing, the whole support side of it. You got to have bigger tenders and bigger, this, that, and the other thing, and just the amount of stuff to keep those things rolling, keep them fed. How many guys you have out there right now that are sitting there talking about pulling maybe like a commodity cart or a bigger fertilizer tank behind it just so they can go longer?
Nothing really on the, like on the air cart side, the commodity cart side, but, there's a few guys that are in the area that'll drill, use an air drill to put in their beans, but, most of those guys like the central commodity systems. But, on the planter side, going back to what I said earlier with the gravity, where everybody's always been used to carrying, as much as they can on the tractor, whether that's 500 or 1,000 or 1,200 or, God forbid, 1,600 gallon, which you do see, and I think that's what keeps engineers up at night. So nobody's really pulling carts anyways, but there are some, and you get the guy that, efficiency is key, and if he can tote around 3,000 gallons with him, he will. But there's very few of those guys that I've seen anyways. And I think that's just the nature of the 12 and 16 row mounted planter market that we have around here for the most part.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we had a guy do that on a 9RX, put I can't remember if it was 500 or 1,000 gallon tanks on all four corners all the way around it, so he could haul it when he was strip tilling. He could put 2,000 or 4,000 gallons with him wherever he went. So it was pretty impressive when they got it done. There's just enough room to get up the ladder and get into the cabin once you're around it. So it was pretty neat deal. So let's talk about this now. So we've taken a look at what's happening out there. Combines are always something that are on my mind because I don't care if the times are good or times are bad. They seem to be an issue, whether it's if times are down a little bit, you have a hard time selling new ones. If times are good, you have a hard time selling used ones. So where you're at right now, what's a combine market look for you and in your area? And kind of is there a move to get to the bigger class of combine and bigger heads, or is it still a 12-row market out where you're at?
Well, speaking for myself, I haven't sold a whole lot of combines. Been more on the tractor and planter side, but I do think, talking to customers that traditional class 6 or class 7 guy is eyeballing a class 80.
Yep.
But then just like you said, just like with the planting side, which I never thought of it that way on the plane, that, more tenders, more fertilizer, but yeah, then if I do that, then I need another auger wagon, I need another semi, so they're kind of weighing those, weighing all those things where it never fails. You can drive anywhere during harvest and you'll see a combine sitting full in the middle of the field, two grain carts full and three trucks full, and they're, still waiting on an empty truck, So I think that kind of keeps that in check, but I think still the class eight combine probably slowly starting to take over.
Yep, that's what we're seeing too. I mean, you take a look at I track a lot of data, and you look across the landscape, and just speaking for the John Deere side of the business, the class 7 combine, obviously there's still quite a few of those out there because of 12, 13, and 14, they made a ton of everything, and that was pretty much the standard. The 9770 rolled into the S670, and it wasn't really till they got to the Class 8, S680 kind of idea, started 2 years after the fact, where there's more people gravitating towards that. And then when they introduced the 16-row head, then you really got into some serious looking at the Class 8 combine. So for us, the Class 8 combine, and I think this is a nationwide thing, irregardless of what color you're selling, the Class 8 combine definitely is definitely a transition point right now. When you have when you're looking out right there and you're seeing what's going on, what's the in your area? Is there a lot of farm consolidation going on right now? Is there a lot of guys that are retiring, getting out, maybe not enough to have son and daughter come back to the farm type of deal? Is there a lot of growth right now amongst your farmers?
I think more and more of it all the time. I just, like this last winter, it just seemed like there was every day the local land brokers had a different piece of land for sale, in the, Adams Hall County area, Buffalo, yep. Kearney County. There's always a piece of ground for sale where drive anywhere in the countryside here and you'll find a for sale sign on a piece of ground where it seemed like when I first moved up here from college, you never saw that. So, I kind of a sign of the times, maybe a little bit, but I haven't recently knocked on anybody's door that said, "Well, I quit. I rented all my ground." But I have had those conversations.
Right.
So,
take a look at the auction market. We talk about that a lot here. That's a key indicator for excuse me. That's a key indicator when you are looking at what's going on in the overall grand scheme of the market. So. Do you have a lot of auctions happening in your area? Do you have a good feel for what that feels like out there? Is there a lot of late model low hour stuff happening out there, or is it your typical 20, 30 year old stuff, guy retirement sale type things?
I think there's a little bit of both. I do have a lot of, you know, it seems like where I see it is I'll be dealing on PCU's machinery and my competitor is the Yarn or Auction Time or
right.
or whoever. So that's where I see it the most. And a lot of it is that, you know, second and third order, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 hour machine is where I see, you know, where I interact with the auctions the most is where, whether it's a sprayer or a tractor, or combine, whatever.
The auction, that is still it's amazing how much the consumer has gravitated towards the auction market compared to what it was 5 or 6 years ago. I mean, that was never even a topic on the table. We used auctions as a measuring stick and not necessarily as a conversation point, you know. So now it's amazing how that's switched around and the comfort, I guess, of the overall consumer, I guess, wanting to be into using the auction and buying that side and seeing stuff. The internet's kind of made things a small world. All right, man. So let's talk about this. We're coming out of the planting cycle here. We're looking at a bunch of different stuff going on there. Let's talk about real crop tractors. So when you look at your real crop tractor marketplace, where do you see some strength there, and what are some of your concerns, I guess, with the real crop tractor market?
I guess the strength is that we've got a lot of interest in like our 1000 series tractor. Although it is a big tractor, just big, even at 396 horse, it's a big chassis. So a lot of excitement about that. What might may or may not be coming down the pipeline following that, but the issue is the use side. You know, looking at tractor, you know, looking at trading in tractors with 5,000-6,000 hours.
Right.
So it's quite the, you know, guys have had to hold off on their upgrades for a while. You know, talked to a guy recently looking at trading tractors, and you know, he usually would have traded every two, three years, maybe 4 years, and now, I mean, they're on year 8 or 9 on this tractor. It's, you know, so that's where I think it's, I you know, hear you guys talk a lot about there's a big gap between the ultra low hour and the high hour, and it, you know, and I think I would consider probably 4,000 to 5,000 hours getting in that high hour market, you know, and, you know, finding that the guy to buy that tractor might be tough. Now, whereas if it had 2,000 hours, you know, that's no sweat. So,
yeah. Yeah, there's been a, you know, you take a look at what, I track those machines by hour segments, so I can kind of see where everything's kind of falling into and how many, what the hour range is of certain machines and what kind of where they fall into and how, what's the count, just not necessarily what the model is, but what the count is, right? And you kind of watch that graph, and it starts out kind of low like this, and it peaks way up at about 1,500 hours, and it gets way high at about 2,500, 3,000 hours, and it starts coming down the other side. Well, on the other side of that is 6,000 hours, right? There's a huge mass of machines between about 2,500 and 6,000 hours, and there's a, it all kind of goes back to what you just said. You know, you these guys were strapped for a little while, and most of those machines are 100 machines or 200 machines, and they should have been a 500 machine based on what we saw the last 5 years. So it's really kind of put a, whether it's a combine or a sprayer or whatever it is, they all have that bulge, right? And whatever hour range they're at, and that's the one part that I'm worried about is that you have these folks coming in, they're trading in their piece of equipment, and they've got 5,000-6,000 hours on their tractor. Well, they've had that machine for that long, and what they want to trade from is that 5,000-6,000 hour tractor down to 500 or 1,000 or 1,500, and there's just not that many of them out there, and that's the premium, I think, between those two machines are there. What I'm really worried about is in that bulge area like that, as we move through the end of the year and assuming that my prediction of 450 corn by harvest is right, and guys have some cash going into 2020, I really feel like that's going to be a bubble that's going to pop, and how that affects the overall market when that stuff starts hitting the auction block in mass is something I'm worried about. So you're giving that much thought. Have you thought about that at all, and how you think that might affect your business?
You know, I have. A big part of our, our business in North and South Dakota, I think now I'm getting outside of my area of expertise, but a lot of high horsepower twin track tractors. And I think a lot of those things have a lot of hours on them, and probably a lot of guys would like to update. So I could see that maybe being an issue towards the end of the year. I suppose, Dusty, our used manager, he could probably speak to that a little better. And maybe he agrees with me, maybe he doesn't, but, those are, when those tractors are new, they're expensive. Guys want to run them a while, and if they have to, they will. But so that I could, it seemed like there for a while we couldn't buy a 1,000-hour, 500 horse twin track tractor,
mm-hmm.
Let alone trade for one.
Yep.
But, so, and of course, I don't have much business selling those tractors down here, but that's, I guess, just an example. But I do see as guys are wanting to, update front wheel assist tractors that we will probably, there's not going to be very many 2,000-hour trades in there. There are a lot of them going to be this 5,000-6,000-hour.
And that's what I'm worried about, because everyone's trading in the same thing and they all want the other side, which is great. They all want that late model, low hour piece of equipment, which is awesome. It helps the trade cycle and your turn and all that kind of stuff. What I'm worried about is they're just adding to the pile over here of who you're going to find to buy that higher hour piece of equipment. And that's why I'm worried about what's going to happen this fall when you start looking at, aged 1,500-hour, 2,000-hour combines.
Well, I think the tough pill to swallow is you might have to, and it's easier said than done, is, take the emotion out of the deal and stick to your numbers. And, I don't know, it's not always worth having a trade that getting the deal isn't always worth the outcome, I guess.
Some truth to that. Yeah.
I don't speak for everyone, but, I don't personally like looking at a trade that I've had for 18, 24 months sitting on the lot,
Right. Yeah.
I'd rather see that thing disappear within, at least the first year, Yeah,
that's some expensive yard art, that's for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Big old paperweight out there. You start getting into the combines and planters and sprayers, and you got, for lack of a better term, lot rot.
Mm-hmm.
You never want to see a machine like that sit more than 12 months. So.
Yeah, that's a struggle. Make sure that stuff moves, because it's interest expense and everything else that's out there on top of that. And it's amazing how fast they kind of deteriorate, like your lot rot example there. I mean, they can sit there and a lot of things can break without them going anywhere. So it's batteries get expensive when they just sit out
mm-hmm.
there.
Right.
Yep. All right, Tori. Well, I think we've kind of covered the gambit here and got a good feel for what's happening in your neck of the woods. If folks wanted to reach out to you and pick your brain and ask you some questions about some stuff, how would they do that?
Well, they can call me on my cell phone, which is 308-627-0602, and call me anytime. Or I'm on all the social media, Tori Seiler on Facebook, or I believe at Tori Seiler on Twitter. Pretty simple. But yeah, look us up on Butler Ag or ButlerMachinery.com and find us that way too.
Outstanding. All right, buddy. Well, anybody listening to this that wants to get a Moving Iron Podcast koozie, shoot me DM me here on Twitter and I'll send you one out. And Tori, yours is in the mail, so you should have it here in a couple of days, actually. So.
Awesome.
Right on, man. All right, Tori, well, you take care of yourself, and we will catch you down the road.
You too, Casey.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at MovingIronPodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Mellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit MovingIronLLC.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and GlobalAgNetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving